Doug Traversa is our speaker today. He is the lay minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma. He recently completed his seminary studies at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Doug is a retired Air Force officer, and he and his wife, Jancy, live in Tullahoma. Doug will speak today on embracing uncertainty. Let's welcome our speaker, Doug Traversa.
I have visual aids today. You'll find out what's in the bag in a moment. Use the front part of this table too. I wanted to share with you that on June 1st, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma has voted to ordain me, and we will be inviting all of you to attend also if you wish. I consider you a second congregation and a second family, and if any of you could come, it's either going to be at 4 or 6, we're not sure yet. But you're all welcome to come. You've been a big part of my life, and I certainly appreciate all the times I've been invited to come up here and speak and share with you. So it's a great honor. The church, as you may know, and Unitarian Universalism is the only organization that can ordain. The UU Association doesn't ordain people. The seminaries don't ordain people. Only the congregation can do that. And so I was deeply touched that they voted to do that. And just wanted to share that with you too. When I was young, back in middle school, I developed a habit. My habit became an all-consuming addiction. Don't get too grim here, it's gonna be humorous. Yes, an insidious thing crept into my life, something known as Dungeons and Dragons. Dungeons and Dragons depends heavily on odd little devices known as dice, but not your standard six-sided dice. I'll leave these up here for you to enjoy. No, back when I was in middle school, I had never heard of anything other than a six-sided dice, but indeed, you have a four-sided dice, you have eight-sided, 10-sided, 12-sided, and for the really adventurous, a 30-sided dice, and a 100-sided dice. And if you want to see how a 100-sided dice works, you can come up and look at this. It's almost like a golf ball, 100 little spheres flat on this, and it has little seeds inside to help weigh it down. You can roll a number from 1 to 100 on this. Now, these dice are used to create what we call a character, because Dungeons and Dragons, unlike so many games, is as much a storytelling game as anything else. And a group of people come together, and the best analogy for those who haven't heard of this game would be you're playing a game similar to The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings, which was the big thing back when I was in middle school. Fantasy literature had not exploded like it has today, where it takes up shelves and shelves in the bookstore. And so in this game, you could be a wizard or a warrior or a thief or a cleric or any number of other characters. And you as a group would go through and explore the wilderness, explore dungeons, fight battles, get treasure, because every monster in Dungeons and Dragons had a chance of carrying some form of treasure on it. Even something as small as a giant rat that you might kill, as we would joke, might have a magic sword strapped to its back, which you could pick up after you fought the battle. But all of these things, the creation of the character, the wandering in the wilderness, the random monsters in the dungeons, what sort of treasure you might find, these things were all done randomly, unless it was part of something pre-planned by the person running the campaign known as the Dungeon Master. And this randomness was created by all these dice. And we had charts and charts and charts of different things, random monsters, random treasure, random terrain, random whoever's running the village you just happened to visit. It was amazing, it was staggering, the complexity of all these middle school boys, and we were all boys at the time. Dating was pretty much a hopeless endeavor for us because we were off slaying monsters. But we had reams of rules, magazines with supplements, and charts to look up and randomly determine our fates and randomly determine what we were going to find literally around the next corner or as we walked that next hexagon on the map and explored to see what was there. We reveled in this randomness. We had no idea what was coming next, and oftentimes neither did the dungeon master. That was half the fun. But if you step outside of the game and go back to the real world, the notion of randomness frightens many people. They want meaning in their life. They want order. They want a higher power to be watching over them, a loving, caring higher power. And they want to know that there is a plan. They want protection and assurance that it's all going to work out in the end. It's going to be fine. All will be well, maybe not in this world, but certainly in the next. And of course, as we know, all too often, things don't work out fine. The world is full of tragic stories. And those who believe in a higher, loving, and compassionate power will struggle trying to understand why does evil exist in this world. Some religions, including Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, place the blame for this suffering, for these tragedies, on a fellow known as Satan. See, everything was okay, everything was great, until he came along and he got Adam and Eve to disobey God and eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And from this point, death and suffering entered the world. For another perspective, we look at Buddhism, and they instead don't look for the cause of suffering so much, but rather why we allow ourselves to suffer. Why do humans suffer? What is it in our makeup that brings this discontentment, unhappiness? What makes us miserable? And Buddhists seek to find new ways of thinking that will alleviate this suffering, to minimize it. They believe it comes from attachment to people, things, health, wealth, the fear of change and attachment to the way things are right now. Change will come, it always does, and you have to learn to embrace that. So, different religions with different perspectives on how we deal with suffering, how we deal with tragedy, and why it exists. Now, I cannot tell you if there is a higher power guiding in any way the actions of humans. I have no idea if anyone or anything has a plan for my life or for yours. I can't tell you this, and it's my humble contention that no one else can either. In my last sermon, I urge you to understand the difference between what you know and what you only believe. So here, today, we're going to enter the realm of belief. I believe that my life, and indeed all life on earth, is a happy accident. This is Doug's belief. You may not share it, and that's okay. Because others will just as strongly believe that there is a plan, that there is a divine guidance going on, and there's a reason for what happens, and we're all part of it. So rather than debate one side or the other, rather I want to examine some questionable thinking that we people use as we consider this issue. There was a short science fiction story I read back when I was playing Dungeons and Dragons, and I don't remember the author. I certainly wish I could. And it was probably not a big name author, rather one of those things you get in those collections of science fiction that come out every month. But in this story, aliens come to Earth, and they are really ticked off. They look at us, and they say, "You are miserable failures. You know, we seeded humanity on this planet many years ago, and you have not lived up to expectations. And we're going to give you 1 year to get your act together, and if you don't, we're going to wipe you all out and start over, because frankly, you're our most dismal failure yet. We have seeded thousands of planets. Everyone else has got it right, and you haven't. 1 year, humanity, and we're coming back, and you'd better be squared away." So they disappear, and humanity, as you might imagine, is in a frenzy of panic. What have we done wrong? And the UN finally becomes an organization that has some clout, and everyone comes together and says, "That's it, no more war. We're going to focus all our energies on healing the sick and feeding the hungry." And the weapons are literally melted down, and in one short year, Earth becomes the paradise we've always hoped for. Peace has broken out everywhere, diseases are wiped out, and food is abundant. And the aliens come back as promised, and humanity, beaming from ear to ear, proudly shows them all their accomplishments, taking the alien ambassadors around, showing them the farms, the hospitals, and all the progress humanity has made. But the aliens, not looking very happy, as we can best determine from not knowing much about alien physiology, say to us, "You have got to be joking. 1 year, we give you a year, and you're worse off than when we left. We are breeding warriors, and you have become pacifists." What is it? You're thumbing your nose at us? That is it. You had just a little bit of promise. You had developed a nuclear weaponry, but you were light years behind everyone else. And now you've got hospitals and farms. That's it. We're fed up. It's all over. And they went back to their spaceships and said, "Prepare for your ultimate annihilation." Now, this would have been a good episode of The Twilight Zone. You could have done this in a half hour, and it had that nice twist at the end that was so common in that show. But the truth it conveys is profound. Think about that. Let's suppose there is a God out there, and God created us and guided us. Why should we presume that God is good in the way we define good? Why not a God who delights in wars, who delights in tragedies and atrocities and genocide and plague and the worst that humanity has to offer? Why not? In fact, many mythologies do indeed have an evil as well as a good side, a pantheon of gods where some are good, some are bad, some are neutral. But when they have evil deities, the humans are still usually urged to root for the good ones or worship the good ones. The evil ones are the ones we're trying to oppose. But I am not aware of any religion that has only one deity, and that single deity is evil and encourages humanity towards evil. This would be too much for us to bear as humans. There would be no hope. So the monotheistic religions must have a good God. Not, I would say, because of logic, but because of hope, because we could not bear the thought of the other. But here we still come up against this problem of evil. After all, what gives you more comfort if you think about something horrific, like the Holocaust in World War II? God allowed, perhaps even had as part of its plan, the systematic extermination of Jews, as well as others such as gypsies and homosexuals that were tormented, tortured, and murdered by the Nazis? Is this part of God's plan? Or did God at least allow it to happen because humans have free will? What about the genocides perpetrated throughout history? Plagues, horrific, slow, lingering deaths, or the loss of beloved family members and friends? Is this randomness or the will of God? And which one is more comforting to you as an individual? It's not an academic question. I had a discussion with one of our members, which I've shared with you in the past, Pat Peller, who gave me permission to talk to you about this. He's the one who had leukemia and had a stem cell transplant, and then his wife was hit by a car as he was recovering, and she died. And as I sat with Pat the next day after her death, we talked about this very thing. And he said, "Doug, the one thing I could not bear right now is if someone came in here, and even with the best of intentions, said something like, 'Well, God has a plan,' or 'She's in a better place,' or 'God needed another angel.'" Now, people don't say these things to be callous or harsh. They say it because they're trying to be kind. But as Pat said, "This is not what I want to hear. This is not what I need to hear." And we sat down and talked about randomness in conjunction with her death. And he said, "It is much more comforting to know that sometimes bad things just happen. There doesn't have to be a reason. To think that God caused my wife to be hit by a car or allowed her to be hit by a car is outrageous. It just happened. It was a horrible accident. It just happened." And that, we both agreed, was infinitely more comforting, at least to the two of us. than to try to explain God's ways to mankind. Accepting death and tragedy and illness as something random rather than something deliberate can bring comfort. This is not just a theory. It is a fact because I've seen it in action. Now, the fact that it can be comforting doesn't make it true. I acknowledge that. But it is something you don't hear emphasized very much in our society. But this I do know. I no longer wrestle with the why of suffering and tragedy. I don't look for reasons, certainly not divine reasons. Humans are certainly and clearly capable of deliberately inflicting pain and misery on others. We don't need to look anywhere else. Humans do it just fine on our own. Psychology and biology can give us some insights, just as studies of geology and meteorology can help us understand why natural disasters occur. We're now no longer mystified by why a hurricane or a typhoon or a tornado or an earthquake kills people. We know why. But the sciences will not help us understand why the pain and misery has come. I maintain this is a question with no satisfactory answer. We understand the mechanics of why it comes, but we can't say, why me? Because there is no answer. You can scream it at the top of your lungs at the universe, but sometimes bad things just happen. So let's assume that things do happen randomly. And by this I mean there is no mastermind, no plan, no director behind it. Let's assume that each of us must face the unknown squarely, looking it straight in the eyes. Does the mystery have to be frightening? That's the question. Do we need to live in fear of random acts of misfortune? Should we spend our entire life trying to minimize risk to the point that we're paralyzed to do anything because something bad might happen? And I would say absolutely not. Do not live your life that way. Consider first your very existence. Consider what it is to be you. According to Jefferson Lab and their website, the human body is made up of 7 × 10^27 power atoms. In other words, a 7 followed by 27 zeros. That's a massive number. That's how many atoms are in your body. According to Scientific American, 100 trillion organisms live on or in you. 100 trillion organisms call you home. That's 10 times, there are 10 times more bacteria, fungi, and other microorganisms in your body than there are human cells. You're not even mostly human. You, sitting there in that chair, are not a single organism. You are a world unto yourself. You are a tiny planet traveling around on planet Earth. In a sense, you orbit planet Earth like the moon orbits planet Earth. Your orbit's just not circular. And on this little world called you resides a world full of creatures you're not fully aware of. And your actions cause life and death for these creatures. When you take antibiotics, you are seeking to destroy bacteria that lives on you and calls you home. You are the wrathful God, bringer of death and destruction. Welcome to Godhood, everybody. But aside from the fact that you are a universe of life, of creatures, what about your mind and your memories? If you lose your memory, if you lose your ability to think, have you ceased to be you? Can you be you without your mind and memories? Does something like a soul exist apart from your physical body that can continue after you die and after your brain ceases to function? Will there still be a part of you when your body is ashes? Fascinating questions, questions that should be studied, and indeed are being studied by scientists. But so far, we still have only speculation. And I would not presume to provide any answers, but in contemplating them, as well as randomness, I think we need to develop a new perspective on our life. So let's go back to that Dungeons and Dragons character. I actually have one of my original guys right here, named Salguad the First, which is Douglas backwards, isn't that clever? When you create a character, you have six characteristics. At least when I played, you did. I don't know what they have now. But you have strength, intelligence, wisdom, dexterity, constitution, and charisma. And so Dungeons & Dragons also helps you with your vocabulary, because at the time I thought constitution was just that document that we wrote back when we declared independence. But actually it can also mean your health. So D&D is an educational game too, parents. Encourage your children to play. But back in the day, we played a very basic form. You had those six characteristics. You grabbed three of these six-sided dice and you rolled them. You added them together and you wrote it down, and that's what you were. So if you rolled three ones on your strength, you were a wimp, because that is the lowest number you can get on three dice. On the other hand, if you managed to get three sixes and rolled an 18, you are going to be a warrior, because your strength was as high as it could possibly be. So, the thing about this was, as you created your character, it was done randomly. And you had to live with the results. We played hardball. If you rolled a really bad character, you didn't get to start over. You were stuck with it, and you had to make the best of it. Because that's how life was. You didn't get to start over with who you were. Well, your character is going to be whatever you roll, and that's the way it is. But as Dungeons & Dragons evolved, people weren't happy with this randomness. So they changed the rules a little bit. And instead of rolling three dice, you could roll four and take the top three to give you a little chance of getting higher numbers. And then they came up with other ways to do it. You roll six times, write the numbers down, and then you can arrange them any way you want. So if you want to be a warrior, you can get your highest number and put it on your strength. And if you want to be a wizard, you put it on your intelligence. And I have been told that there are even newer ways of doing this now. But the point is, people didn't like that randomness. People want to be above average. And they want to be able to plan what they're going to be. So if you go into the game, you start off by saying, I want to be A, and then you develop your character that way. So the randomness was removed a little bit. But you can't do that in real life. You don't get any input on who your parents are, whether you're going to be male or female, what your physical characteristics are. Just like the early days of D&D, you rolled the dice and that's what you were, and you made the best of it. We might plan for retirement. We might set aside money for those golden days when we no longer have to set the alarm clock and get up and work. We might exercise and eat well to ensure that we're healthy. We might drive carefully, always wearing our seat belts, always making signal change turns with our turn signal to minimize the chance of accident. But accidents still happen. No matter what we do, there are some things beyond our control, both good and bad. This is the nature of life. My next sermon is going to be on living mindfully. I can't discuss randomness and learning to love it without at least touching on it now. Many who have experienced a personal tragedy, be it the loss of a loved one, the loss of health, the loss of a job, or anything else that's important to them, they need to become aware of the importance of each moment in our life. This was something else that Pat Peller shared with me as we talked about the death of his wife. He said, this brings into stark illumination in my life how you must treasure each moment, because you don't know what tomorrow holds. Each moment that you're with someone you love, each moment that you're doing something that you enjoy, that you have your health, appreciate each moment, because there are no guarantees for what comes next. So learn to look at each moment as a miracle, as a treasure, as something special, instead of simply something to get through as you wait for the weekend, or wait for Christmas, or wait for the vacation, or wait for something else. Don't wish your life away for these certain moments you're hoping for. Treasure each moment. Rather than the fear or the longing that something has scripted a happy ending for us, I suggest that we revel in each moment of our lives. There is a very common saying, and I don't know who originated it, but as you're laying on your deathbed, hopefully after a long and happy life, are you going to look at all your friends and family who've gathered around and say, gee, I wish I had spent more time at the office? That was a joke. Oh boy, that one bombed. No, hopefully you're not going to wish you had worked your life away. Look around at the people who matter to you. Cultivate those good relationships, the meaningful experiences, and the wonderful memories. Touch each other's lives in a positive way. Appreciate each moment of your life, each new experience, each new random event that you encounter. Do not fear ambiguity, but embrace it. Accept that there are many things we will never know the answer to, and that's okay. That is life. There's just a lot of things that are going to be mysteries. So you don't fear randomness, because if you fear it, you fear life itself. And that will certainly drive you crazy. So when those tough times come, you do the best you can, getting through it one day at a time, but spare yourself the agony of wondering what you did to make God so angry at you, or the universe, or whoever you blame, whoever you think is in control. Bad things can happen for no reason at all. So instead, find strength and joy from those who stand with you in those times. And if that doesn't help, find your strength and joy in simply being in your existence and having the gift of life. Because just by being you, you have already defied the odds. The odds of you existing are astronomical. If you really think about it, it's a miracle that each one of us lives. So even as I write these words, as I was preparing this sermon, I knew and fully acknowledge that people will disagree with me. There are many Unitarian Universalists for whom making meaning, avoiding this concept of randomness, is just as important. Here's a passage, for instance, from a publication called Making Meaning After a Disaster, a workshop for Unitarian Universalist adults. As human beings, we reflect. We ask why about our lives, because we are drawn to seek meaning. We need meaning as much as we need food and drink. Our reflection is rooted in this human drive to understand, to make the truest and richest meaning possible of our lives. Now, I agree that within us there is a deep drive to find meaning. I think it requires a great deal of work, intellectual and spiritual, to accept randomness and not be afraid of it. I think that it is far more important to respond to tragedy correctly rather than trying to explain it. For instance, as I said, when Pat lost his wife, he chose to focus on positive things to try to find his way out of his grief. He focused on the fact that from his wife, organs could be used in transplants for several people. He talked about this a lot and said, probably 5 or 6 times to me over the next couple weeks, he said, at some point, there were people in other hospital rooms with balloons of celebration hanging next to hospital beds for people who had received a new liver or a new kidney or whatever other organs they were able to save from her. And he said, it helps me a little bit to know that other people had a second chance because of this tragedy. He talked about his son, Brian, who didn't really express a lot of emotion. He was not the, touchy-feely sort of child. But as a young man, he leaned over to his dad and said, "Don't you dare leave me now." And he said, "That gives me the strength to carry on, that my son needs me." So he focused on the love of family, friends, and his congregation, people who stood with him through the tough times. And by accepting that painful things happen for no reason at all, it just happens, he moved on day by day. Pat has been an inspiration to many people, certainly to me, to watch what he went through and how he tried to maintain this positive outlook. And by the way, Pat passed his 100th day. He's been allowed to go home. He's allowed to drive. He is the poster boy for a successful stem cell transplant And his only regret is that his wife's not there to celebrate it with him. But he has his second chance of life. And now he gets to be an inspiration to us to how to carry on in the face of tragedy. So my final point as I close is honesty. I mentioned this in my last sermon also, that all of these topics that I talk about ultimately come down to being honest with ourselves. This was the third in my four sermon series on things I think are important, both in our lives in Unitarian Universalism. And I want to remind you real quick, the first was think for yourself. The second was know the difference between what you know and what you believe. This was the third. Next will be living mindfully. All four of these cause us to be honest with ourselves. When we think for ourselves, we're honest enough to admit that it's easy to follow others when we shouldn't, and it can be very dangerous. We do not surrender our power to someone else to tell us ultimate truth. We must be honest enough to examine what we are told, and honest enough to distinguish between what it is we merely believe and what we know from experience, from what we've seen. And we must also be honest enough to, because we live by belief, because there's things we don't really know, that we need to allow others different beliefs and accept that also, that people don't have to line up behind us and say, yeah, that person's got it all figured out. Too many allow beliefs to become fact, at least in their minds, and then, in turn, they condemn others as heretics. Today we have looked at being honest with ourselves when life hurts, and it does hurt often. We can be honest and say we don't know why bad things happen, and indeed there's probably no plan out there that's governing the actions of humans. In this world of randomness and unpredictability, we can still find joy, happiness, and goodness without having to appeal to a plan. Life is just this, what we experience. We should appreciate it, knowing full well that things can change at any moment. Appreciate each moment that you have. Cherish the simple things. Live in the now. Don't always be living for the future. Appreciate the present. That does not mean don't plan for tomorrow. I mean don't be obsessed by tomorrow. Don't fixate on the past or mistakes you may have made. Those things happen too. Rather, honestly face the randomness of life. Enjoy the miracle that is you. The odds against us being here were astronomical, and here we are. And for just being here, for being able to take a breath, to be able to experience life, we can and should rejoice moment by moment for the gift of being. Amen and blessed be.